We're talking to Nick Brabham from Our Nightlife Queensland about a stakeholders meeting with the Attorney General considering the lockout laws.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. First session was focused on drink bans after midnight and how that would be applied. So the government intends to limit certain types of drinks after that time, and it really aimed at what they call rapid intoxicating drinks, so shots, bombs, that sort of stuff. I guess we'll be working really hard in that session to allow cool small venues to still be able to serve a cocktail after midnight, you know, your nice whiskey bars and places that have a good liquor to be still be able to serve that after midnight, because that's a bit of a problem in places like New South Wales and South Australia. The second session, we delved into ID scanning and the rollout of that, whether it be in a mandatory sort of structure, or there would be, you know, applied to certain venues that needed it. So, you know, big, really big venues, nightclubs, probably it's a useful tool. You know, a small live music venue or cocktail bar, probably unnecessary. So trying to strike that balance with government. The third session was about giving powers to police to be able to ban people from precincts and venues for drug offences. So police currently have the power to ban people from like the Valley Precinct, for example, for violent offences, and they're looking to extend that power to drug offences as well. So some discussion around whether that should apply to, you know, a possession offence if you were caught with a small amount of stuff for recreational use, or only on the supply side. So that was that's sort of what we went through yesterday.
As far as like the first point with the rapid intoxication, you mentioned that they're going to possibly have they decided to like maybe let some of these boutique cocktail bars still serve, or is that still being worked out?
Yeah, look, we haven't got confirmation that the Attorney General is happy with what we went through yesterday, but I'm pretty hopeful that we've struck a balance so that you'll see every venue in the state ban things like shots after midnight. And most venues around the state will still be able to serve a high end whiskey or something on the rocks after midnight, and cocktails. If you have a cocktail list, we're hopeful that all we've got to do is have a printed cocktail list of a reasonable price that isn't, you know, super cheap to try and make people drink faster, that'll be allowable. So I'm pretty hopeful of a good outcome there.
So who else was in this stakeholders meeting?
So it's a number of licensee groups from around the state. So we have what we call safe night precincts across the state. So there was representatives from the majority of those, people like the Queensland Hoteliers Association, and then people like police, ambulance, fire, and then what we call the public health advocates. So doctors and physicians and people who want to see limits placed on alcohol consumption in Australia, and are sort of really big advocates for, you know, training hour reductions and drink bans and those sorts of things. So it was a broad cross-section of interested parties.
I saw a forum on SBS, I think it was on the 23rd of March. I don't know if it's still up there, if anyone wants to look at it. But it was mentioned that some of the venues like can stay open if they don't serve drinks. Is that true, or
that's the case now? You know, a venue can stay open past its liquor license time. It's just not allowed to serve any more alcohol. You know, there are economic reasons that venues don't do that, simply because it's hard to keep the doors open when you've got to pay staff and pay entertainers and pay security if you've got nothing really to sell. So yeah, look, realistically, when we have 3 a.m. last drinks on 1 July for the venues that sort of trade past that, some of them may stay open for a short period of time, but it'll be interesting to see how much later they can afford to keep the doors open when, you know, they can only really sell soft drink or some food or coffee or those sorts of things.
Will there be, do you imagine, like juice bars like opening up like as after-hour places that possibly might, you know, cater to people that are like, you know, doing drugs?
It'll be interesting to see. I've been around the Valley for probably over 15 years now, and back in the day we did have what we the recovery clubs that opened up very early in the morning and went on for people partying on who might just enjoy kicking on, or they've had some drugs and they want to keep going, or for whatever reason. It'll be interesting to see if that happens again. It may well, but we also might see some of your bigger nightclubs try and play in that space a bit too, not in terms of illicit drugs, but trying to keep the doors open via offering something different, you know, whether it be juice or breakfast or whatever.
So if July 1st is when the 3am lockout will be implemented, how will these other suggestions, such as ID scanning and expanding police presence, like how would those things be legislated in time to coincide with that date?
So the legislation's already been written and passed. What governments then do, they attach what they call regulations to an act of parliament. So the regulations basically define in detail what the broad legislation has enacted. So for instance, with the rapid intoxicating drinks stuff, they are currently banned on a cent of the bill. When the governor basically signed it into law, that became active. So there is a ban currently in Queensland for what we call rapid intoxicating drinks, but the definition of that hadn't yet been worked out by government. So that comes when they then write a regulation and pass that in parliament to define what that is, and then that will, you know, we'll have a definition of what that drink actually is, and it will actually be banned. So that's the same process for all of those things.
Yeah. And as far as banning people, I suspect that that's still being worked out as well. Now, if someone gets on a list, how can they be taken off? And do they know they're on the list?
Yep. So we currently have banning provisions in Queensland. So say you assault someone in a precinct, the police are able to, on the spot, give you a 10-day ban, and they can extend that up to 3 months. And that's at the choice of the local senior sergeant. So say you go in a fight in the valley on Saturday night, police on the spot will give you a 10-day ban from the area, and then you might be informed during the week that the local police senior sergeant has then increased that to 3 months because he thinks, you know, what you did was really bad and you deserve not to be able to come back. In terms of how people are informed about that, it's via them being involved with the police. So they've been issued a notice to appear in court or what have you, and your information's with them. Venues are then told about those bans, so they're aware of them, so they know that if they see you in or around the venue, they're to call police immediately. But that's really hard when you're getting, you know, 20, 30 banned individuals every week, and you got mug shots of people all over the place trying to tell who's who. So that's where the ID scanning comes in. So police and government would upload a list of banned individuals into your ID scanner, and that would basically red light and say you're not welcome. Police would be informed and you'd be arrested. To touch on how you would appeal that if you got onto that list, there is an appeals process. So you have to contact the police station, and the police will, it'll be elevated to, I believe, an inspector level rank, and that appeal process will occur, and they'll look at the pros and cons and talk to you, and they'll decide whether to uphold or not. If you're then not happy with that, you can take it to the Queensland Civil Administrative Tribunal, QCAT, and challenge it there. So there is that appeals process there. We also have a court process as well for bans. So if you are taken to court for assaulting someone, the court can impose a ban as part of your bail condition or once you're convicted. So there are mechanisms there. The drug stuff will basically mirror that. So I think the concern is that, you know, say a young person's caught smoking a joint in the valley, are they going to cop a ban from a police officer who doesn't like them? Is that really what we're trying to achieve? Probably not. But if you're, say involved in organised crime and dealing large amounts of illicit drugs and found in a venue, yeah, we probably would like to see you banned from the area for a certain time to get rid of you. So that's the balance that needs to be struck.
We're talking to Nick Brabin from Our Nightlife Queensland about a stakeholders meeting with the Attorney General considering the lockout laws and some logistics of how they will be implemented.
If someone gets banned and it's sent out to the clubs and they don't have a scanning machine, the larger clubs would, because they want to keep their license, they can actually go to a nice little, you know, boutique cocktail bar and carry on, can't they?
Potentially. Yeah. Potentially. I think we're all pretty intelligent about, you know, the types of people that go to certain places and the types of people. I think, you know, those that get bans, especially at the moment for violent offences, aren't the types that are going to turn up to, say, a local band playing at Black Bear Lodge. It's not their scene. That type of person doesn't really hang out with those types of people. So it's fairly, it manages itself in that respect. Conversely, the guy that loves going to a big nightclub like The Family and, you know, drinking vodka lime soda is not going to turn up to the Bowery to drink martinis when he's been banned. So I think, you know, naturally that sort of happens, and that's where that mandatory ID scanning structure needs to be really settled on, because we don't really want our small cool venues having to pay extra for scanners, probably having that in position. It costs money to operate them, it costs money to buy them. But a big your big nightclubs, most of them already have them anyway, so, you know, it's sort of working itself out naturally.
You'd think that they'd be able to, like, make some kind of, like, online software with using an iPad.
That's the future, you know. So as these ID scanning companies develop their technology, we'll hopefully see mobile solutions come in. Almost, you know, if you look at your modern Queensland license, it's got a chip in it. We might in the future have an iPhone with a little thing attached that you plug your license into, and the chip is read and yes or no, and that's really workable for a small and a large venue. And I think we'll see that progress over the years, and I think that'll happen, and we'll solve some of these issues technologically.
My question is sort of rewinding back over the past month. When the lockout laws were implemented in Sydney, there seemed to be a lot of outrage and a lot of protests on the streets about them. I was just wondering what has happened in Queensland over the past month since these laws were confirmed in February.
Yeah, look, I mean, Sydney's probably taken a couple of years to really get active in protesting theirs. They've had them for quite a while, and it's only, you know, very recently we've seen the large protests from groups like Keep Sydney Open and Reclaim the Streets down in Sydney, and that's a really positive thing. I think communities and young people and inner people who live in the inner city fighting for what they want their cities to be, and I have no doubt we'll see that develop in Brisbane. We've got some active community-driven groups that are busy in this space. So Keep Brisbane Open and sort of taken that Sydney one and started their Facebook page and are working on things. The No Curfew group's been around for a long time, and they work in this space, and there are a couple of others who are springing up. So, you know, we'll work together with them to harness that energy and hopefully do something in the near future, probably as we get to that 1 July implementation date, and try and push back a little and show government that, you know, it's not necessarily the best way to address antisocial behaviour in a community. We can do it differently and keep our city vibrant.
Was live music impacts discussed in the meeting last night?
Yeah, it certainly was. So a representative of Q Music was there, and the rep, Jesse, he owns a few venues in the valley as well, so very, very good person to have involved. So, you know, the views of the live music industry are super important. A lot of people sort of say, well, most bands are finished by 11 or 12, so this won't affect them, but it can affect those venues because they might need to stay open until later to be able to make some more money. They'll put a DJ on and serve some drinks, and that helps them pay the rent and pay the performers. So, you know, we're talking about an ecosystem, and you put stress on that system, it's going to affect everyone in the web no matter what. So, yeah, definitely we need to be really cognizant of that.
And where can people keep track of this your website, and are there other places as well, like a governmental site?
Yeah, of course. So I mean, if you're really into the legislative technical stuff, just Google the Office of Liquor and Gaming Regulation. That'll take you straight to their webpage, where all the information about what government calls the Tackling Alcohol-Fueled Violence Amendment Bill is held, and the dates that things will happen and how that will affect people, and it'll all be there. But we'll definitely keep people updated via our methods too.
And how long is this trial?
Well, the review date is set for 2018. So we're talking about basically a 24-month trial and review date. Look, there's going to be an election before then, and things will change depending on the outcome of that and the activity that everyone has, and policies will change. So I think, the election's probably the next big target in terms of what happens to the future of these laws.
People just needing social company, like, you know, combating, let's say, depression or, like, even bipolar, might not want to drink. And just, like, on a Saturday and Friday, it's magnified, they're alone. And they're told, I believe, to be with people. Has this been taken into account or talked about?
And not in any great detail. I mean, you've raised it with me before, Elliot, and I think it's a very valid point. Socializing is the key driver for why young people go out, and all people. Look, you know, yes, having a drink is high up on that list, but it has been found that just simply socialising is the key driver. So people want to be around people and want to meet people. And, you know, if we're limiting the ability to do that, I think that's a negative thing for society as a whole. And as you say, especially those who are at risk of things like that. And we need to be cognizant of those effects on the community for sure. And so hopefully we can work with government to deliver things in the Valley Precinct and others around the state to look after anyone that's going to be affected by this negatively.